Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Open Door Philanthropy Conference Special. We brought our microphones down to the Nexus U.S. Summit this year at the United States Institute of Peace. And in plain view of the Lincoln Memorial, over the course of 2 days, we conducted 10 interviews with a diverse array of conference delegates. Some of our guests, like Hank Love from the American Jobs Project, were actively fundraising. And I was able to convince Hank to submit a proposal to the unfunded list that's currently under review. Other guests, like Karen Yanis, were active funders. Karen ran Oprah Winfrey's foundation for 10 years. I was able to convince Karen to join the evaluation committee. We had a bunch of other cool folks sit down with us who were a little bit harder to find. On a personal note, this was just an absolute blast for me. I got the chance to interview some of my favorite people in a beautiful setting. We had amazing conversations. I hope you'll listen and understand that these represent just a microcosm of my own participation in Nexus over the years. I've been attending this conference for almost 9 years now. Each conversation you listen to here, whether I've just met our guest or known them for years, is reminiscent of hundreds of conversations I've had in the halls of Nexus over the years. People ask me often how I've built such an impressive network. And I can tell you that it's because of conversations like these. At the very least, I think you'll find them entertaining. Please note that these were recorded live on site in a less than ideal acoustic circumstance. You can pretty much always hear me because I'm basically Shrek. But sometimes our guests are a little bit harder to hear. We'll do our best to make transcripts available since every word of these conversations were important and interesting. But for now, I hope you enjoy. We're recording?
You're good.
Okay, great. Hello.
Good. Well,
I'm here at the Nexus US Summit in D.C. still. I've had more coffee than I should have had, and I'm sure I'll probably have more. We interviewed two dudes this morning, and I said, well, that's enough. We're going to find a lady. God damn it. And I found one.
You did.
Her name is Jennifer Murty, and she is here in the Open Door Philanthropy booth. Welcome.
Thank you.
Is this your first time being interviewed for a podcast?
It is my first time, yes.
Okay, great. I will try to give you a good experience here. Let's start with just a little bit of basic biography. Where are you from?
I'm from Boston, Massachusetts.
Boston, Massachusetts.
Yes.
So in my experience, you're probably not actually from Boston.
I'm from a suburb near Boston. Well, I live in a suburb near Boston, but I'm actually from Kenya in Africa.
Oh, okay. So you don't have a Kenyan accent either.
I do not. I lived there for 18 years, but I have...
Careful with the cord, sorry.
Oh, sorry.
The mic cord is there.
Okay. Yes, I lived there for 18 years, but I moved to the United States for college and have stayed. I'm settled in the Boston area. I've been there about 15 years.
That's interesting. I have a friend. He's a reviewer for the Unfunded List. His name is Miles Lutheran. He's from the Boston area.
Okay.
And he moved to Kenya. He lives in Kenya now. Runs a company.
There you go.
So that's the thing that happens.
It does happen.
Which suburb of Boston do you
Winchester.
Live in now? Winchester. Now. Mm-hmm. My family came from Newton. My mother grew up in...
Okay. I just met someone else from Newton.
I would imagine.
Yes.
There's not too much of a surprise. The very nice town, Newton. So what brings you to the Nexus Summit? Is this your first time coming?
It's not. It's my first time in several years. I went to a Nexus event in New York probably 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I came to learn about what millennials and people are doing in terms of philanthropy and impact investing.
What have you learned? What are they doing?
Doing all sorts of creative things, which is not surprising. I would say what I've been most inspired by is a real interest in addressing social justice and human rights issues. We've started to see that with our clients.
Mm-hmm.
For many years, there's been a real focus on climate change. There should be, and there should continue to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say other areas have come up of interest to people, and particularly around mm-hmm. social justice.
I'd like to talk about, you mentioned your clients in a moment. I'd like to ask a little bit about that and what you do. But
But first, I think in terms of millennials and what they fund, it's interesting you say social justice issues and human rights. I think those have traditionally been fairly what I would call an unfunded area. We are the unfunded list here, and we read a lot of proposals from people who are struggling to raise money, and that is definitely something that can struggle. So I try to think about, well, why that is, right? Mm-hmm. The big givers, right, and a lot, and pretty much anybody giving money, they tend to give to something that affects them personally, right?
Yes.
And if your human rights are being oppressed, mm-hmm. right, or like you are experiencing some sort of like social justice tragedy, it's unlikely that you have a whole lot of extra capital to give towards solving that problem, right? Whereas if you're worried about getting Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. you might be really rich,
right?
And so you can donate all that money to researching Alzheimer's, you're related to, your daughter has schizophrenia, so you decide to invest a lot of money in mental health research. That's why the diseases that rich people get are not unfunded. Well, I think even those, all things could use more money, right?
Correct.
We're trying to solve problems, but I am pleased to hear you say you think that there's an increasing interest in that.
I do.
I do think this may be one of the generation that starts strategically giving to things that don't affect them personally.
I would agree 100%.
I think I've been coming to Nexus since the beginning.
Okay.
And since the beginning, we've been having a lot of conversations about empathy, mm-hmm. about understanding other people. We do a lot to keep this conference human.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to some other philanthropy conferences that are like very the sort of transaction minded,
yes.
Very professional. I'm making finger quotes right now, right? I don't know. I mean, this is humanitarian work. Mm-hmm. We have to be actual humans with each other. So tell me about some of the humans that are your clients, right? You mentioned that before. What sort of work do you do?
So we work with about 300 clients at Pathstone, and it's families and individuals and nonprofits and foundations. So those are the typical clients that we have. Typically, clients have $20 million or more, and we're a multifamily office. And so what that means is we provide a full range of services to clients, addressing all aspects of their wealth, whether that's investments, to financial planning, to tax and estate planning, insurance, philanthropy, mm-hmm. and long list of other items. And we help them manage their lives. And we have a specialty in impact investing and using ESG factors selecting.
What are ESG factors?
ESG factors are environmental, social, and governance factors that get used as criteria in evaluating companies that go into portfolios. And it's helping to identify good corporate citizens. So companies that are sensitive to the environment in which they're working, or considering the governance structure of the company. Is there a diverse board? Are there women in leadership? Do they have a fair compensation structure? Social factors is any number of things. It's how employees are treated, what the benefit programs look like, how a company functions within the community in which they're working, right? So if they've set up a factory or a business, you know, are they supporting the community in which they're working? So what we do is we're hiring managers that are looking at these factors, and we believe it's identifying better companies that will be more sustainable in the future because they're considering all of these other factors and how they're running themselves.
Okay. Quick edit break for David Jaffe. Can you hear her all right when she looks at... Okay. Sorry. Very good.
And I was just going to add, can I tie in the impact investing with philanthropy?
Yes. So that is something. So I am not an impact investor.
Okay.
I am a philanthropist. I'm not an investor. I don't know how to do it. Why would I start doing something that I don't know how to do?
Well, you would hire someone who knows what they're doing. But I would say our clients that do impact investing.
I should clarify. There are people I have hired that do my investments for me.
Okay.
But I don't actively spend time looking for, because I don't know how to do that.
That's right. And so you hired someone who does, which is what you should do. And so I would say for our clients that have engaged us to do ESG and impact investing, they tend to be very philanthropic already and have a real passion to try to change the world for the better. And what they come to realize is that they can do that through their philanthropy, or if it's a foundation, through grant making. They can try to address different issues. But that they have a real powerful tool in the assets that they own. And that if they invest in a more thoughtful way in the markets, both in the public and private markets, that they can have a positive social impact that way. And so what we try to help clients do is address their values, or if it's a foundation, the mission of the foundation, through their investments.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that part always seems like a no-brainer to me. Mm-hmm. If you're like, for instance, I learned early on in the Moss Foundation that we had investments in a number of sin companies. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, and we were funding programs that like tried to counteract the negative damage that our investments were making. That's silly. I can't believe that ever happened to anybody in the first place, right? And so you hear these stories about, and this is very trendy these days, foundations trying to think about, you know, switching their endowments over. And to me, it's just like, yes, of course, that needs to happen.
Yes.
To some extent, I think it can be, for some people, a distraction from philanthropy, right? Like, well, we're moving our assets over into investment. There are still groups out there that are going to need grants, not investment. And so, but
yes.
you were trying to talk about the connection between these two things.
Yes, there's absolutely a connection. And I think what you've said is correct, that there are many organizations where a grant or a charitable gift is the type of support that they need. And sometimes that's what an organization needs initially, and then it can, as the organization grows, it can move into something where it might be appropriate for an investment.
Mm-hmm.
But not always.
Right.
And there are certainly organizations that's the right structure, and that's how somebody should support them. So I'm not trying to say that.
So a lot of the folks that apply to the unfunded list, they have a good program and they really want to do good in the world, but they don't come from a wealthy background, and they didn't learn about philanthropy in school because we don't teach it.
Correct.
And so they'll make a lot of very common mistakes. One of them is, you know, a lot of the proposals we've read have been submitted originally to very well branded foundations or corporate entities or people who have a marketing team that can promote this so that you heard about it and that's why you applied, right? That is, it's very tricky to fundraise from those people because they are so well known. They receive so many applications. Corporate philanthropy usually has some sort of advertising sponsorship tie-in, so it's a little bit extra work for you to do. A lot of the times we sort of try to steer them. I suggest, you know, you should be thinking about family foundations, individual donors, right? And I point out to them that those people give a lot more money than corporations do. And you can understand how the average American might have that misconception.
Yes.
Because the family foundations are very much off the radar for most people.
Yes, they're more private, right? It's harder to identify them. It's easier to identify a corporation that you know, and then you can search to see if they have a foundation. So I think that's a fair assessment.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about foundations that have nothing to do with a corporate, just some, like finding someone's family foundation, having a good, strong network of family foundation funders, to me seems like one of the more sustainable ways to run a nonprofit.
I would agree.
And is this is part of your work there? You help these family foundations get connected to the groups that they fund, or what's the process there?
To some extent, I would say, I mean, we are not specialists in philanthropic advising, like in Arabella, you had mentioned that earlier. What we help, so the clients that would be ours are family foundations. We don't do corporate foundations, we specialize in family foundations.
So the 300 clients you mentioned earlier, these are 300 families?
It's families, family foundations, and nonprofits with endowments.
Okay,
so
sure.
So we do actually work with some nonprofits.
Sure.
Our clients have asked us to, you know, assess some nonprofits over time to give them our perspective, or they've told us we really want to support, you know, a particular area, social area. Do you know of a good one? One I can think of, I was asked recently, someone wanted to address homelessness issues in Boston. So they said, who should we talk to? So we can help with that.
Well, what, when he says that, what do you do? You have relationships already with
groups? We have relationships in the community, both with nonprofits, but also, in this case, I suggested they speak with the Boston Foundation, which is the community foundation in
I'm familiar.
The Boston area.
We were, the Unfunded List is a Classy Award nominee,
yes.
And we were at the Classy Awards last summer, which was sponsored by the Boston Foundation.
So what the Boston Foundation, like other community foundations, are, they're an incredible resource, and so I regularly refer people.
They are a very good community foundation, possibly the best in the country.
They are. They're amazing. And they, even if a client doesn't have money with them,
they can help you. Sorry to my local community foundation. Yeah. You are great as well.
Well, they're one of the oldest, so they've been doing it for
a while. Yeah, no, and in Boston, it's everybody. My mother was very impressed to find out. When I said I'm a nominee for the Classy Awards, she's like, she didn't seem to care. It's sponsored by they got money from the Boston Foundation.
Then it was
oh my God, wow,
yes,
that's a big deal.
That's great.
In Boston, it's a very prestigious thing.
It is. But they have an incredible team of people that, you know, that work with advisors like us, and so we can just float ideas by them.
Yeah, that's very good.
And I said,
it's a very good point.
Who would you suggest?
If you're a nonprofit, especially one that does local services,
yes,
you need to be in touch with your community foundation.
Absolutely.
Hopefully this isn't too noisy. I have one more question. We are, folks may have noticed that we are in a break. The noise level may have gone up a little bit. But just one more question. So I have about 200 evaluators, and I said they're all experts in something. One of the smarter ones, once called me up. She said, Dave, I have an embarrassing question to ask. I don't know the difference between a foundation and a family office. Could you please tell me? And what I said, I gave her the best answer I could. And there's a Moss Family Office, and then there's a foundation within that. And what I basically said is, like, you know, it's just sort of like, she had worked for the government for a while. I was like, well, every government agency does work. There's lots of work that's happening, right? And then there is the granting arm, right? And this is, the families have lots of stuff going on as well. There'll be like a family business, maybe more than one family business. Maybe there's property that multiple people own, right? Shared assets of that sort. They manage all of that. And then within that is maybe included the family's philanthropy, which may be a 501c3 foundation. It may be a checking account called such and such foundation, right? Or sometimes increasingly there are LLC giving vehicles and other stuff like that. All of that would fall under the family office umbrella.
Yes.
Now, did I give her the correct answer?
You gave her a great answer.
That's terrific.
And I'm not surprised she asked, because I can tell you, before I got into working at a foundation and a single family office and now a multifamily office, I didn't know what those terms were either. I think the majority of Americans or people around the world are not familiar with those terms. I would say the one other thing we've seen.
Hold on 1 second. Hey, buddy, I'm actively recording. Thank you. Sorry about that, David. We'll be done in just a minute.
Almost there. I would say one other thing that we're seeing a lot more happening is that families are setting up donor advised funds. So you didn't mention that as one of the structures that family offices use.
Increasingly, yes. Fidelity Donor Advised Fund is the biggest foundation in the world.
It is.
It's like $1 trillion in assets, yes, or something crazy.
It's amazing. So you can set up a donor advised fund at a place like Fidelity or Schwab, but community foundations are also a great vehicle for setting up a donor advised fund. And many families choose to do that because it's a little bit more, it's more anonymous. And they're able to do their grant making through that entity as opposed to a family foundation.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jennifer. That was very informative. And next time someone asks me the difference between a foundation and a family office, I can just send them to this episode.
That's
I don't have to keep answering this, folks. All right. Thank you very much. That was fun.
Thank you.